Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
So, how are you?
Well, I've sort of recovered. I've got a bit of a two-day hangover, if I'm honest with you, because obviously we were not parents on Sunday and Monday. The kids stayed over at Lucy's house. Our nanny's obviously working and she's like helping us out 3 days a week. So we've got our childcare as well, which is amazing. And she had them overnight. They absolutely love going there as well. Luna was like, sleep over. And in my head, I was thinking, she doesn't know, but we're going to go out and get really drunk with our friends in the garden. It was really, really good fun.
Oh, do you know, we actually had a few drinks on Saturday night with our friends, but I feel like I always have in the back of my mind, if the kids are there, I just can't quite let loose.
Of course you can't.
Even though James wasn't drinking, but I still can't quite, like, just, yeah. But yeah, it was still nice to have, you know, a bit of time with friends and stuff. So
it's the ultimate responsibility, isn't it? And like we said last week, like you said, it doesn't really matter if you've got other people around you, like your mum, and you kind of feel like it's going to fall on your shoulders. So that's why I said to Doz, I was like, I'm going to go. So if we can get childcare sorted for the night, then please come with me. If not, you're going to have to do it because it's my turn. And I just needed to have a little bit of space. And I woke up on the Monday, 9:30, 10 o'clock, banging headache.
Oh, but like, my
sense
God.
Of freedom.
Yeah, exactly. And knowing that you can just lay in bed if you want to.
Yeah,
you can do whatever you want. Oh, dream. Do you know what? Childcare, we were talking about it, wasn't we, on Instagram. It is so difficult at the moment. I think there's so many people feeling so stuck because if you hadn't sorted your childcare before lockdown, which I know a lot of people who are on maternity leave at the moment won't have done, then it's really, really tricky because no nurseries, a lot of childminders are booked, you know, their capacity is lower and they can't take on new people. So it's a really challenging time in terms of childcare.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you don't want to necessarily, well, you can't scrimp and kind of think, oh, well, they'll be all right here if you don't get a good feeling from it. So actually finding the person that's going to either be looking after them for a few hours, whatever it is, or, you know, if you want to go down the nanny route, then great. If you want to get them into a nursery, trying to find, like you said, that if there's slots available for them, it is a bit of a minefield.
It is.
But don't give up. Persevere.
No, exactly.
You were talking about trouble, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads. I personally got, I found Chelsea, who's looking after Axel and Gigi, just through a friend. She actually lives on my road, which is strange. And, you know, just word of mouth. But obviously there's Bubble, there's childcare.co.uk. Like before, when we moved house and I couldn't get Axel into a nursery, we had a nanny when Axel was, I think, about a year and a half. And I found her on childcare.co.uk. So there are so many resources out there to find someone if you are in a bit of a tricky situation.
We found the lovely Lucy on the Surrey Nanny Network, which is a Facebook group. I think if you actually go onto Facebook, they've got all these different groups of, you know, nannies and babysitters, and you can kind of put in whatever you need, really. So that's quite handy. But we're not talking about childcare today.
No.
We're going to be talking about surrogacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've never discussed before.
Not even between us.
No, exactly. It's not something that we've personally had to think about. But I know a friend of mine has thought about it and he's, you know, been doing lots of research and sort of has said how difficult it is as well to get information.
Well, it's illegal in this country. You can't pay.
you, obviously in surrogacy is not illegal, but you can't pay a surrogate. So you can't be seen to be making money from surrogacy. That's basically no. In the UK at the moment. But you can pay for a surrogate's expenses. But they're just the infrastructure's not really set up here. Whereas in America, it's quite a big business, right? I mean, I hate using that word, but you get paid a lot of money for it over there.
Yeah, and I think quite a lot of people from the UK go to America because, yeah. I mean, it costs a lot of money, but the setup is there, the processes are there. And I think, you know, doing it in the UK, as our guests will sort of say, it's difficult to find the information and sort of find the route and get all of the resources that you need.
Yeah. Actually, I think there's a bit of a taboo in this country around this subject. You know, people have very strong opinions about whether, you know, it should be allowed and should you be able to choose your child's, you know, hair colour and eye colour and skin colour and, you know, all of those types of things. You know, some people get very kind of heated about it. Me personally, I think if you want to have a child and you can't have a child, if you're a same-sex couple, you know, you do whatever you can to feel like you're part of that family unit. And this comes down to love, you know, whether you're a gay couple and you want to have a child and you can't carry it yourself, or you know, you're a lesbian couple and one of you can do it but you need an egg donor, whatever it takes to get a child, for me and for you, I don't like putting words in your mouth, but I know you feel the same, you know, we need to appreciate that it's not as easy for some people as it is for others.
I believe that everyone, you know, should experience being a parent if they want to, in whichever way they want to as well, whether that be surrogacy, adoption, however that happens. I think everyone has the right to do that, really.
I agree with you. So that's why today's chat is going to be a really exciting one. They are kind of real big Instagrammers. They've got twodads.u.uk on Instagram, and they are really promoting same-sex surrogacy in this country. They've got three children in total, and they are called Mike and Wes. Today we're chatting to Two Dads. Let's get into it. You know what, Georgia and I always feel incredibly lucky that we get to speak to the people that we do on this podcast.
Yeah.
Today is a particularly special one because we've never spoken to anybody about surrogacy before, let alone a gay couple. So today we are going to really delve deep into the subject. This particular couple have a 16-year-old girl who was from a previous marriage. They then have Tallulah, who is 4 in October. She was born via surrogacy. They have their gorgeous little boy, Duke, who is 10 months old. Today we are chatting to Mike and Wes from Two Dads. Hello.
Yay.
How are you guys?
We're really good, thank you.
Yeah, we're all right. Not too bad, thanks.
And how's lockdown been treating you?
It's been fairly kind, I guess.
It was a bit rough at the start, but then we kind of adjusted.
Yeah, kind of found your rhythm.
Yeah, it's been really tough because we don't normally have the kids with us 24/7, which is a real challenge. But it's kind of double-edged sword, really, because we've really seen Duke come on and some of those things we would have missed. But equally, it's been really difficult to try and keep work on track and kind of get a break. But I think we've all kind of found a level of where we're all happy.
Yeah, and we're, you know what I mean, we're safe, family are safe. It's just been a bit of an experience, really.
How have you been handling kind of juggling? Because, you know, obviously if there's two parents in the household that both work, are you taking it in shifts? So one of you does the morning, one of you does the afternoon. What does it look like?
No, we have tried that and it didn't really work for us. And what I've kind of, because I felt like I was failing on both sides. I was failing at being a dad, but I was also failing at work. So I kind of have taken a bit of a step back so that Michael can do more of the stuff that he needs to do. And I'm kind of looking after the kids a bit more.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was just finding what worked, really, because like Wes said, the first 4 weeks were just horrendous anyway.
Yeah.
And you know, it was fear, it was the unknown, it was a lot of wine.
Loads.
So much wine. and then just lots of anger and just moaning. So we it took us a while, but we found this sort of new way of doing stuff, and it seems to be working all right now.
Oh, I think everyone's got to that. Like, we sort of had boiling point around 4 weeks, like 4 weeks into lockdown. And then after that, it's been sort of a, you know, a bit of a roller coaster, but we've definitely found our flow a little bit more now.
Mm. I definitely think that it'll change as going forward as well, because I don't think we'll go back to how we were previously. I think it's kind of, it is a new way for us, but I think it's a way that we kind of enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really hope that we don't go back to the way things were. And I think what hopefully this has done is that it's proved to all the big, you know, the big corporations, there's some of the bigger employers that actually we can work from homes with our laptops, we can make it happen, and we are just as productive. So hopefully it's going to be a good
absolutely
agreed.
A good thing. Agreed. Now listen guys, let's just kind of get into your journey. Can you kind of start from the beginning about, you know, what it was like when you first had that conversation with each other about wanting to have children?
So Wes and I met at Birmingham Pride in June 2012, and I was fairly newly single, Wes was single, and met him and just kind of knew that this was someone I needed to get know a little bit better. So, you know, we moved quite fast in our relationship, and after sort of 4 months, we were engaged. And it was around about that period where I had the conversation quite early, because I always wanted to be a parent and hadn't had that opportunity in previous boyfriends that I'd had. They never wanted children, and we had that dialogue quite early of me going, right, I'm gonna sound like an absolute crazy person now, but do you want kids with me, and if so, when? And he was quite open to it and was like, do you know what, yeah, I'm cool with that if you want kids. And
I suppose for me, I'd never really seen it as a plan going forward, because I already had a daughter, but I wasn't against it. And I kind of thought, you know, being a dad's an amazing thing. And if Michael wants to be a dad, then I'm really happy to work as a couple to see how we can make that happen.
So we obviously had to, our preferred route was surrogacy. And we started doing the investigations and exploring and, you know, it's a minefield out there. And one of the issues with surrogacy is there's just not one central point to collate all of this information and research. So it was like 3 years of research, really, of just trying to understand the countries you could go to, or what the UK was like, or what the law was like. And that's what we did.
And so what is the process in the UK?
Okay, so in the UK, commercial surrogacy isn't permitted by law. But
so that means you can't pay someone.
Yeah,
correct. So you can't you can't profit from surrogacy. But what you can do is altruistic surrogacy is perfectly acceptable and legal, and that means that a surrogate can be reimbursed reasonable expenses to carry a child. And there are two types of surrogacy. You've got traditional surrogacy and you've got host or gestational surrogacy. And we went for gestational or host surrogacy. And that basically means our surrogate doesn't use her eggs.
Yes.
We have an egg donor as well. And we have IVF. And then the blastocyst, the embryo, is then put back inside our surrogate for safekeeping. And that's the option that we opted for.
Is that a more expensive option? Is the mentality behind that because you don't want the surrogate to be the biological mother?
Yeah, I think, you know what, for us and back then, that was exactly what we wanted to do.
And also, you know, I mean, buying, we need eggs and we needed a surrogate to make it happen. So we needed to buy donor eggs, and that it's really expensive. Unfortunately, that's one of the downsides with the route that we took, is that the eggs are very expensive. But equally, we wanted to be able to choose some of the features of our egg donor. So if Michael and I were able to create a family naturally, then we wanted to try and create the one which would look most like us. So Michael, we were going to use Michael's sperm, we used my characteristics to choose the egg donor, so that when the baby was, you know, touch wood, hopefully born, it would have my characteristics, so that it would look like if we were going to create a family of our own. So that's how we kind of went down that. So we chose because there's only certain characteristics you can know from an egg donor. So we chose, we wanted blue eyes, we wanted them to be tall. I'm not tall, neither is Mike, but we wanted to try and give them an advantage in life. We wanted them to be blonde, fair skinned. So, you know, all of those things. And it's exactly, you know, if you look at Tallulah now, she's exactly all of those elements.
Yeah, it's incredible, really, what they, how they helped us match the egg donor for Tallulah, because the UK egg donation, as you might know, is classed as non-anonymous. So what that means is that we will get, or Tallulah will be able to have non-identifiable information when she's 16, and then she can have full disclosure of her donor when she's 18 if she wants to.
Right, okay.
Whereas in the States or in other places, it's, you know, you look through a catalogue and you choose your donor, whereas that can't happen here.
Wow. And how do you go about choosing whose sperm to use?
That's a really good question, actually. It's one that we get asked quite often.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It can be quite a tricky conversation and quite a tricky discussion to have. But for Michael and I, because I already had a daughter, it was a really simple conversation, which was very comfortable. We speak to lots of couples where this is a real challenge about how who goes first. People have tossed coins, that, you know, there's been lots of different ways that people have decided. And ultimately, it's one that I think is quite a difficult and personal one between, you know,
I think you have to be really careful of resentment.
Because
it's a real, particularly, you know, in the same-sex male community, I know, as like Wes said, it can be a real challenging topic. But for us, thankfully, it was a really straightforward thing to do. So, that was how we made the decision. It was just the obvious thing for us to choose.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes back to, you know, the conversation that lots of people who struggle to get pregnant naturally probably go through, and also people that have adopted children. At the end of the day, if you are raising a child as your own and you're providing emotionally, financially, you know, everything else that comes with being, and they call you dad, that's your child, regardless of where the sperm, regardless of where the sperm comes from. And I think, you know, I was trying to have that conversation with my sister when she was thinking about having, because my sister can't have children. And I said, you know, you could get a donor egg. And then she was like, but then that wouldn't be my baby. And I said, but you've carried it. Like, you would look after it. Some people see it differently, but I feel like we need to blast that taboo up, because if you are looking
at
it.
And I think how you think about it pre and how you think about it post are miles apart. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, I was apprehensive about how I would feel and what emotions I would feel bringing a child into the world that wasn't biologically mine.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is that it makes absolutely no difference at all. And that when that child first comes into your life, you've got nothing but love for it. And I think biology matters much less once your child is born than when you're planning it.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you ever consider adoption, or was that never going to be an option and surrogacy was the only way that you wanted to be parents?
And do you know what? This question we get asked quite a bit too. Adoption for us was never really on the cards. It was just never how we saw building our family, and it wasn't a never, it was just the first option for us to explore was always surrogacy, because there were, I guess, if I'm being totally truthful, there were milestones that I wanted to experience as a parent, you know, whether that's going to scans, going to appointments, seeing your baby kick, you know, I wanted to, you know, completely feel every element to what that journey was like, and you know, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, I wanted to experience a little mini me. And this is where I contradict some of the stuff that Wes says. I wanted that biological connection from the get-go, but it wasn't, and then until we had Duke, which is my non-biological child, that then I completely understand what Wes means, because there is no difference between the love that I've got for T and Duke.
That's amazing.
We do get asked a lot about why didn't we adopt, and some people think that you know, adoption should be our preferred route, and you know, there's lots of children in the world that need parents, and that's absolutely true, but for us, you know, we wanted biological children, and we're not ashamed to say that, because I think it's, you know, you only get one shot at life, and you've got to make it what you want it to be. And for us, you know, having that biological link was really important to us. And for other people, that's less important. But for us, it was an option that we wanted.
Mm-hmm. Were there any kind of unsuspected challenges during the process that you found?
Yeah, there were. And there were, I think, firstly, the time that this takes is can be quite draining. And I think the cost can be, for some people, out of reach. So that can be an issue. But then when you start on the process and then, you know, working with a clinic that's got a reputable surrogacy program is what you obviously need to be doing. So that part of the process is really smooth. It's once you're pregnant and it's once you enter the NHS is when you think, oh shit, yeah, these guys are not ready for two men, a surrogate and a husband, to all be in the same room together.
Oh, wow.
They just don't. You can see them. They're quite panicked because if they don't have the appropriate policy, then this is risk for them. There are safeguarding risks in that NHS language.
Yeah.
And
I think the problem is that the Surrogacy Arrangements Act, which is, what was it, Michael, 1985?
Yeah.
And that's what everything else streams down from, that, you know, NHS policy, all of those things. So ultimately, the Surrogacy Arrangements Act isn't fit for purpose for, you know, creating modern families. So all of the drip down elements of that are also not fit for purpose. So, you know, NHS policy, you know, it's just not fit for purpose for people like us who create our families in this way. And it's just not up to date. So, you know, some of the challenges that we faced were with the NHS. And it wasn't that they were going out of their way to make it difficult for us.
No, not at all.
It was just that, you know, the policies weren't fit for purpose, and some NHS trusts don't have the experience of doing, you know, a same sex.
And that was the issue with our particular trust. I think they didn't have a pleasant experience before us, and that was their only experience of surrogacy. So I think their guard was up, and they were just not quite sure how to deal with us. So, you know, what they got from us was, we pushed back on certain elements, and it was the first, you know, our 12-week appointment that we had. It set the tone, unfortunately. And the consultant was, again, very much reading an out-of-date policy, and he was uncomfortable. You could see he was uncomfortable from the start, but he was basically telling us what we couldn't do rather than what we could do. So
we were so excited to be there. It was our first scan. We were just like, you know, this was the start of it. And we came out of that appointment just so deflated, didn't we?
Yeah, he was, you know, so, you know, there were things like, well, you know, firstly, there's four people in this room. These rooms aren't big enough to, you know, you can't all be in this room. And when you have a scan, you know, we can't really accommodate all of you in a scan. When this child's born, we just need to set your expectation that we can't provide a room for you. You'll need to have the baby handed over to you off-site, possibly in the car park. You won't have your baby's name on the wristband. It will need to have the surrogate's surname because, you know, in the eyes of the law, and this is where obviously surrogacy thankfully has been reformed, but in the eyes of the current law, a surrogate, and if she is married, they are the legal parents of your child until you apply for your parental order. So up until your child's 4.5, 5 months old, the legal mother and legal father are the surrogate and her husband.
Wow.
So you have to get your head around that from the beginning, and you have to educate healthcare professionals about that, really, because not many people know that. So,
yeah. And as you can imagine, that can present itself lots of problems. You know, like, you know, if your child needed, you know, specialist care when it was born, then the medical team would need to get consent from the surrogate and her husband rather than us.
Even though the baby's living with you and Mike, they would have to go to the baby's legal parents, the surrogate and her husband, to get any form of consent around medical stuff. And it all has to go through them in the first 4 or 5 months.
You do all your pre-consents when you're on the maternity ward. So once your baby's born and on the lead up to, you make sure, and this is one of the things that some people get wrong, you make sure that your midwifery team and your team, your consultant and your healthcare professionals get all of your consents done in advance. So if you don't do that, then you could be faced with those types of, you know, challenges that you've just explained. But this was a real journey for us to learn about. So we were fortunate that the NHS Trust wanted to learn, but you know, we had to issue legal proceedings, intention to sue, because when we had our appointment, we came away and we were just gutted because we were like, this wasn't the experience that we thought we were going to have. So, you know, we didn't want any type of financial benefit to sue. We just wanted to change the policy. So we got a solicitor and we drafted a strongly worded letter. And I think, was there about 12 counts of discrimination?
Ultimately, it was about the trust was discriminating against us because they wouldn't treat everyone else in the same way that they were potentially treating us. So we did have to, you know, get advice from our solicitor. And, you know, once we realised that there was that many counts, we were just, you know, and some people would just accept what the trust was saying and just put up with it. But for us, we have this mantra through our relationship and it's about it feeling right. And we came out of that consultation saying, this just doesn't feel right. And we're just not going to accept this because this is not the journey we set out to.
Yeah. And I guess you wanted to pave the way for other parents as well, so that no one had to go through the same, you know, same things as you had.
Yeah. And, you know, Michael mentioned, you know, having the baby's named on the tag. You know, to some people and to the trust, that, you know, that's quite an insignificant thing, you know, and it's like, why is that such a hassle? But for us, that was a massive thing because that was the first thing that our baby's name was going to be on, the first piece of, you know, the first time we would see our baby's name would be on that tag. So for us, it was a massive thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, actually, this isn't because we all know how incredible the NHS are in terms of their care. And, you know, when we absolutely need to sort of highlight that here, this is something that they need to be re-educated on. And like you said, the law needs to be, the policies need to be set out in a completely different way, because this isn't something that perhaps they've experienced before, but this is the modern family. This is the way the modern people and the families look. So it's not okay for them to go, oh, well, we haven't had anyone like this in before. It's like, well, there are plenty of families that are doing it this way, and that needs to be just as accepted and just as acceptable as a same-sex couple going in. Why shouldn't all four of them? That makes my blood boil, to be honest with you.
And this is not going to change. This is only going to increase. You know, more and more people are going to be creating their families this way. It's becoming more and more accessible. So they need to kind of, and you know, the upside of this is that, you know, we built an amazing relationship with them. You know, they didn't discriminate with us because they took heed of the notice and then wanted to work with us. We had an amazing experience with the trust being born, and you know, we couldn't fault them.
No, and the great thing was this trust rewrote their policy and they rolled it out to other trusts in their CCG in the Northwest, and other trusts then adopted this policy. So because of working with them to change the policy, so many other families through surrogacy will have had a far more inclusive experience because of a policy that was created by not only the healthcare professionals, but us and our surrogate. So it kind of created a wave then for us to go, right, what else can we do? What else can we do to make things far easier for people? And that's really when Two Dads UK started to gather a bit more momentum.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
So welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we?
You must be super proud of everything you've achieved to this day. I mean, amazing.
when we went through this process, there was no one point of contact or organization that could help us. We then wanted to create that organization so that where people were in our position, they didn't have to do 3 years worth of research and you know, go around the houses. They could come to us and say, right, how do I do this? Mm-hmm. And that's what we do now. You know, we help people understand what their route to fatherhood is and give them all of the options so that they can make decisions for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, wow. Just going back to when you first announced, you know, to your friends, your family, your colleagues that you were pregnant, how did they react? Is it something that you discussed, you know, probably with your family, but with your friends? How did people react and what questions came up?
I think because of the journey that you go on for surrogacy and obviously being two men, yes, you can be all coy and yes, you know, unlike, I guess, heterosexuals that are using surrogacy, it's usually the last chance, really. So if you're trying to conceive or struggling to conceive and you're heterosexual, surrogacy is normally your last option.
Yeah.
So it's very private usually. Whereas for two men, it's normally our first option. So we were quite vocal about it and we spoke about our journey quite publicly. But when we came to announce that pregnancy, I'm one of two boys, as is Wes, and both our brothers are gay. So my parents never thought they would have grandchildren, but always longed to have them. And when we announced that we were pregnant, you know, my parents were in floods of tears. You know, my mom's one of 11 children, and she was the only one that didn't have grandchildren. So what's amazing about surrogacy is just the impact it has on people's lives that you just wouldn't understand normally. But we were really great that we were surrounded by loads of supportive friends and family that were really rooting for this to work for us.
Yeah.
What sort of relationship did you have with your surrogate?
Yeah, we still have a really amazing relationship with our surrogate. And, you know, obviously we didn't know our surrogate when we first started the journey. And, you know, we built a relationship over a number of years. And she was also the surrogate for our son Duke as well. So she did it twice for us. You know, surrogates are amazing people and very selfless, but we still have an amazing relationship with her. She's now, we class, when we started this journey, we didn't expect the relationship to develop into the one that it did, and we didn't expect our surrogate to be a part of our lives going forward, but she absolutely is. And you know, we keep in constant contact with her. She's amazing, and she would do it again for us if she could.
Yeah.
Although we'll maybe talk about this a bit later on, but Michael wants another one, and I'm like, no.
You want another child, Michael?
I really do. Yeah. I'm like one of those crazy people that just loves babies and just want another child. And
because we still have blastocysts in the freezer from both of our cycles. So
I've got two left, and Wes has got four. And I'm like, let's have one more baby, please.
Oh,
and
Wes is
like, I'm like, no. It's, have you been alive for the last 10 months and realize how hard it's been, how much sleep we haven't had?
Can we talk about how much it costs?
That's what I was going to ask about.
So our first round, so the total cost to create our embryos, our surrogate's expenses, to pay for our eggs, a little bit of legal costs, cost us about £32,000.
Whoa.
And then we had a failed transfer. So it worked first time on our transfer with Tallulah. And then 2 years later, we started to try again. And this time we were using Wes's sperm, and we sourced a different egg donor, because unfortunately the clinic contacted our first egg donor and she couldn't donate again, which was a real shame. So
the plan was always that we'd use the same egg donor for a sibling journey, so that there'd be that genetic
and it wasn't meant to be, and we were gutted, but we just got back on the horse and they found us another donor that was the criteria that we asked for, and we created all these embryos and we did a transfer and it failed. And then also all of our embryos also all died. So that cycle overnight cost us £12,000, and just all went wrong. So that then went into the mix. And then we had our third round. So that round probably cost us about another £35,000. So it was certainly an expense. Now, it doesn't have to be that expensive. We had a couple of bumps in the road that created that way. But if you break the cost down, you know, generally surrogates expenses are anything between 10 and sort of 15, 16,000 pounds. So that's usually a typical surrogate's expenses for that period.
Yeah, a big cost. And I don't think people realise is, you know, eggs can cost up to about eight grand.
Yeah. And then your IVF and eggs is usually about 10, 12,000 pounds.
Was there a point during the process where you thought, what are we doing here? Like what sort of insecurities or fears came up around the surrogacy?
It's really strange because I think a lot of people that don't understand surrogacy have that, oh my God, the surrogate's going to keep the baby. And that, you know, I think if you don't understand surrogacy, that's a very genuine and a real fear to have. Yeah. But, you know, you quickly realise that surrogates don't want to keep these babies. So surrogates want to hand them back. You know, surrogates are doing the most incredible task for these intended parents. And once you understand that, then that...
And I think once you also build your relationship with your surrogate, mm-hmm. you start to, you know, understand mm-hmm. their rationale and why they want to do that. You know, every surrogate has a different story, but, you know, particularly it's about wanting to help people.
Yeah. So that fear very quickly goes. For me, it was about... There's a with any type of parenting, there's that responsibility, and I guess I was just, you know, was I being selfish because I wanted to be a dad, and this child was going to have to come into the world having two dads that may not have it easy, yeah. And that was something that I toiled with because I was like, yeah, I've got this urge to be a parent, but is this child's going to, you know, live a very, you know, a new normal life and maybe the only child in their class with two dads. And so I really battled with that, thinking, am I being really selfish about wanting children? And is this something that I should pursue? And again, I think that's quite normal when you're a same-sex family.
Yeah.
I think that was something that we both felt. But the great thing was when we had our kids and we started talking to more families, and we're looking at nurseries, you know, Tallulah's one of three other children from a same-sex family. And you then quickly start to understand that, oh, you know, we're not the only ones. And she's going to have more peers that have got two moms or two dads. And you very quickly realise that, yeah, that was just a whole waste of time, just worried for no reason.
Yeah. And I think it's also about equipping them ready for when they do get in those situations where they're challenged or they're asked, they're equipped with all of the right tools to be able to answer the questions and be confident and be, I mean, Tallulah is the fiercest little girl I know. And she does not put up with any nonsense and will confidently and proudly tell you about her two daddies.
Yes. The first thing she tells people, you know, she asks them their favorite color, she tells them a name, and then she reminds them she's got two dads.
Oh, amazing.
She's like super proud of her little family unit. It's adorable.
And have there been any difficult situations, probably for Tallulah more so because she's older, or has she been absolutely fine?
For now, I think she's been fine. There hasn't been, I mean, she's been asked at nursery and she's very, you know, she just talks about her family and she doesn't see it as anything other than just her family. So for her, that's her normal.
She has, last year she asked us if she would ever be a mummy. And my heart like sank a tiny bit. And I was like, oh, what do you mean, darling? She's like, you know, I've not got a mummy, but does that mean I won't be a mummy? And I'm like, no, not at all. So we had to explain, you know, about that she can be a mummy if she wants to. It's, you know, it's not for everybody, but, you know, if she wants to be a mummy, then that's fine too. Yeah. And, you know, she asked, you know, when she's older, will she get a mummy? And so we had to be really honest with her. We were like, no, darling, you'll never have a mommy, and you're really special and you're really lucky. You've got two daddies, you've got a big sister, you've got a nanny, and you've got all of these lovely aunties around you. But let's be really truthful. You're never going to have a mommy.
But it's just the only way, really, is about being truthful and not and not kind of, you've got to be honest with them. And, you know, there'll come a time when we have to talk in more detail about how Tallulah came into the world and how it all happened. But, you know, that's one of those things we're going to have to face when the time's right and when it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Have you guys had that conversation between the two of you on how maybe you would start that? Would you wait for her to come to you, or do you feel like you want to be the ones to present it to her?
No, I think we have had a conversation about it, and we're fortunate enough to have a lot of books that help donor conceived children understand, you know, in an appropriate way. But we are also starting to drip feed stuff through to her, you know, so that it becomes part of everyday conversation rather than just this one-off big event.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she understands
where she grew
and the part that her surrogate played in her life. And, you know, so we're always talking about our surrogate, and she comes to visit and we go to visit. So, you know, she is a part of Tallulah's life. So Tallulah understands that she grew in her tummy and she helped her daddies. And, you know, so I think it's just about, you know, drip feeding that information through when it's appropriate, so that it isn't like one big event and she then struggles to get her head around it.
Mm. Sounds amazing, guys. I just wanted to ask G, obviously we are obsessed with your Instagram page. We love following you guys. And I kind of want to sort of move on to, you know, what your sort of goal is. But before I ask you that, do you ever receive any negativity around what you're doing? And if so, how do you deal with that? Well, you can send me and Georgia in to fight for you, because we're...
It's funny, actually. Up until now, we hadn't faced a lot, had we, Michael?
No.
Really?
And we've done some big campaigns, some brand collaborations, you know, over the year to promote same-sex parenting. And we've been, we were, and not too long ago, we were going, oh, we've been really lucky. You know, we've never really had much grief.
Yeah. But then just last week, there was a campaign which we did with Cowan Gate. And Cowan Gate did a launch to do with Pride. And then we got hit hard on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and you know, Michael and I can take getting hit hard because, you know, we're adults and we can deal with it. But when they start going for our kids, that's when the gloves come off.
What were they saying? What could they possibly say?
Well, I'm happily will tell you, because this is how sick some people are out there. Well, firstly, they were sexualizing our daughter, which was just horrific.
Oh my God.
And you know what? It was the loveliest of pictures. It was just a picture which was taken on the shoot. It was me. It was the four of us. And it was just really, you know, you can see us really engaged as a family.
And then they said someone, and they're always Twitter profiles with no profile pictures.
Yeah.
These people are. The other one was like, two dads will give their babies AIDS.
Oh my God.
Seriously now? And then there was, oh God, we were paedophiles, we were vile, we were bile, we were disgusting, we were perverts, our children shouldn't grow to get older because why would they want this life? And it was a really lovely campaign, and it's a really, and fair play to Cowan Gate, because they, you know, they're really celebrating diversity with this campaign. Yeah. And it's a beautiful, beautiful campaign. But you just get these absolute dickheads that just want to just be abhorrent and just vile. And there's no other word for them.
Those sorts of people are terrified and uneducated and very closed-minded. And it's all coming from a place of fear. You have to feel very sorry for people that are doing that. And you have to just have to tell them to go away. So there's nothing you can do. Bye-bye.
And also, I doubt very much that any of them would say anything in real life, and they're just hiding behind their keyboards, aren't they? And that's the thing that's so scary now, isn't it? That they can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
What I think is amazing is that, you know, major brands are now, you know, showcasing diversity in a lot of their mainstream, you know, stuff they do, which is a massive step in the right direction, you know. Mm-hmm. And we should, you know, continue doing more of it, because it's about normalizing and people seeing that, you know, a family like ours is fine.
And we're visible, and we, for Tallulah and Duke's sake, we want to be visible, because what we don't want is that when they're at school, when two dads are at the gate or two mummies, the kids are staring. You know, we want brands to get on board to show families like ours actually exist, because that's the way we're going to change this opinion in the playground, by us being visible.
And it's about trying to change the future for our kids, you know, by doing a lot of stuff we do, about raising awareness and, you know, changing people's perceptions. It's about hopefully ensuring that the future for our children is changing and will change.
Do you know what? You're absolutely right, because it's all well and good us having these conversations. These conversations are so important. But for us four having the chat, you know, we have got no issues surrounding it. But what we need to see is when we're driving into a city, we need to look up and see on a billboard to, you know, a same-sex couple promoting, like working with a bigger brand or opening a magazine and seeing a same-sex couple there and talking about surrogacy more. It needs, like you said, it needs to be everywhere to normalise. And that, I guess, leads me on to this question with... Dads, what do you want from the campaign? What are you trying to achieve?
The more people that see and talk about it is what we want, because as Wes says, this isn't about me and Wes. This is much bigger than this. This is about us. This is our children, our children's families being visible. So it's just about educating people that wouldn't normally entertain or understand how families like ours are created and how children like ours are loved. So by educating the general public either about surrogacy or about same-sex parenting or about any of the other missions that we're involved in, it's going to help destigmatize, it's going to help normalize families like ours. So then brands don't have to trip over themselves to collaborate with same-sex families. It just becomes part of the normal process that, you know, it's not so obvious. It's just like, oh yeah, there's two mummies. Or,
and they don't just do it for the month of June. They do it all year round, you know, and it's...
Yeah.
And for me, it's about, you know, when we started our journey, we didn't know a lot about surrogacy. And most of the people in the UK don't know a lot about UK surrogacy. So if we can change that, what that might mean is that more surrogates become available, treatment might be cheaper, and more people will have access to being able to use surrogacy to create their family, which, you know, we speak to lots of intended parents who want to, you know, our advice, and some of them, even UK surrogacy is out of reach because it's so cost prohibitive. So if we can try and change that, and that if that helps bring the cost down so that more people have access to it, or even that it becomes accessible on the NHS, then what an amazing thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what piece of advice would you give to somebody who's about to start this process or is thinking about it?
It's a journey, and it's
not easy.
It's not easy, and it will put an immense amount of pressure on your relationship or your marriage to the point of where you question it sometimes, question the journey. So be prepared for a roller coaster of emotions is one of the things that I would say. And, you know, you don't just necessarily have to go down the gestational route like we did. You know, we've got friends
options,
that can
go
through other options. So, you know, traditional surrogacy is more obtainable for people, and that can cost between £10,000 and £15,000, for example, because there's no IVF and eggs cost. So it's about persevering. It's about just remembering what that dream and goal is, and just keep coming back to that and try to stay on the path, because it's a journey that's going to test you, but just bear with it.
It's all worth it in the end. Absolutely worth it in the end.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and I just can't wait to see what's next for you guys. I really feel passionately about what you're doing. I feel like it's so important for us to, like we said, normalize and just make it the same as everything else, because it is. It's all about love, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Wasn't that incredible?
I love those two. I love everything about them. They're so passionate as well.
I know. And also I learned so much. You know, there's so many things that you don't think about, like the scan, for instance, going to a scan as a four. And the sort of challenges you might face, being at the birth. They say that at first they were, someone in the NHS said that they should hand over the baby in the car park.
Yeah. God.
I mean, I guess there needs to be a lot of change, doesn't there? So that sort of trusts and hospitals and everyone in that field are set up for, you know, for this kind of experience.
It's madness, isn't it, to think that it's 2020 and we're still having to have these sorts of conversations where we're like, things need to change, people need to be re-educated, you know, trusts need to shake up their ideas. It's like, it's 2020, for God's sakes. People are having children in different ways now. It's not just man and woman and vagina and penis.
No, exactly.
It does well. Look, I think that they're obviously campaigning nonstop, so definitely check them out on Instagram, twodads.u.uk. They're incredible. Now, listen, we want to talk to everybody about the British Podcast Awards, don't we?
We do. Last year, we won a silver award, didn't we, Zoe?
In the family space.
Yeah, but this year, you can vote for us in the Listener's Choice Awards. So all you have to do is go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. We can put this all on our Instagram. You type in Made by Mummers and you obviously vote for us.
And it's your vote alone as well. So we kind of need you to do that. It would be really lovely to get that gong this year. And like Georgia said, we'll put it all over our Instagram as well. But yeah, if you could take a few minutes out of your day just to go down to the website and drop us a little vote, that would be amazing. We're going to be back on Friday. And it's just going to be Georgia and I. So yeah, we'll let you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, and as always, please do, like, any suggestions, send them over at Made by Mummers or to Zoe at Zoe Hardman.
And we'd love you to rate, review and subscribe to our podcast as well. And please, 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 we always ask you, if you could let one of your mum mates know that you haven't maybe told about the podcast, that would be brilliant. Let's get more people listening to it. And we'll see you on Friday.
See you Friday.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.